There we go.
It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. And basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 is the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushu Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Even though we had serious rain.
Listen to that.
Yes. Thunderstorms in the area. It is raining. I don't know. I can't see out the window. But it's raining somewhere. I can hear it. And, yeah, definitely coming down here once again in this part of Florida. So it's one of those things that we just have to deal with.
And no
welcome to the show.
Storm or hurricane. I mean, this is just rain.
Yeah, I heard there was a new one out there, though.
Yes, there is.
Come back to check something out here, but yeah, I thought there was something else out there. Okay, so we are with All About Wine and on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Mike. Ron is your host, as always, and tonight we do have a special guest, and I will get out of here in a minute and go get him, but we are still on Rhode Island, correct?
We are still on Rhode Island, and
yes,
we will be this week and next week. We're not sure what we're going to be doing. I am going to be out of town, but I'm going to be in Missouri, and may try to do the program from Missouri and pick up a Missouri winery there. We'll see how that goes. You can always follow us on our Facebook or any of that stuff. We try to keep that up to date for you. So
yeah, definitely go to, because that's where I got my information earlier was from reading the Facebook. So you go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. That's all one word and everything. So you'll stay up to date that way. Ron posts messages as soon as he has the information. He said today, actually about an hour ago, Andrew will join us tonight on the show. Andy is from Sheila Laura Vineyard and Winery in Rhode Island. I believe that's Coventry. Yeah, Coventry, Rhode Island. So
Coventry.
Really cool. That's a great way to stay in touch with the show and find out what's happening. As well, during the show, sometimes I'll post information about what's being talked about on our Twitter, which is twitter.com/allaboutwinebtr. So real simple to do that as well. It's at allaboutwinebtr on Twitter. So follow us there and like us on Facebook and stay in touch. Good. Okay, here we go.
Thank you. I found out just about an hour or so ago myself that Andy was able to join us tonight. So it's a good way to keep in touch, like Mike said there.
I guess I'll go get him.
Okay, yeah. Well, you jump out for a minute here while you go grab a hold of Andy or Andrew. We'll have to ask him. He signed his emails, Andy and Andrew, so we'll check and see what he goes by for sure. Sheila Laura Vineyard and Winery in Coventry, Rhode Island, and over 20 different varieties of wine are manufactured each year.
They have five distinct labels, a natural fruit labels, and I lost the screen I was reading that on. Well, that's good because we're going to bring him in and he will be able to tell us about it anyway. So I don't have to tell you about the whole, all the stuff. But he's was going to be on with us last week and was feeling a little bit under the weather. And so we postponed until this week. But that's okay because that gives him all the time he wants this week instead of sharing it last week. Our guest last week, Joe Sherry from Longworthy Farm Winery, really ended up talking a lot more with us. Had a lot to say. That is available on archives, by the way, if you happen to miss it. Also, any of you news listeners out there, I Facebooked the link to this. And so if anybody's out there listening that's for the first time, or are you just tuning in or stuff like this, or are you catching it live, we're on archives. Thanks. Thanks for popping in on us. And hope it's entertaining. Hope you learned something. Hope you have fun with it. And come back and listen some more. We are always thrilled to have more people listen to it. It just does nothing for us one way or the other. But it's really nice to have ourselves a whole bunch of listeners. We have Andrew sitting back there. Hello, Andrew. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm doing really quite well. And yourself?
Very good.
Good.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be a part of it tonight.
No, I'm glad you were able to make it this week. I just passed on to people that you were a little under the weather last week, but that's good because it gives you the whole hour this week or as long as you want to talk. And so it's great to have you with us tonight.
Thank you, man.
You are, tell us, Sheila Lara, Vineyard and Winery.
Well, we're a small family-owned and operated winery here in Rhode Island, Coventry, Rhode Island, which is on the western portion of the state. And I believe like last week and the week before, you had some of the folks from Coastal Wine Trail, and they're on the other side of the Newport Bridge. We're a pretty small state, but in the scheme of being a Rhode Islander, anything more than about a 20-minute ride is kind of a distance. So,
You're right down in the little you're on the water. You're not on the water.
Yeah, no, we're on the western side. We're probably closer to the Connecticut portion.
Okay.
Right.
Just, you know, to clarify where.
The closest town next to us would be Exeter. You're looking at your map.
Oh, okay. Okay. Here, I see where you are. Yeah, I was trying to.
You got me there? Okay.
Yeah, we have a delay from me talking to you talking, and it's sometimes, you know, I'll step on you, you'll step on me, and it's only because there's this delay here, so.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah. So, tell us about Sheila Lara Winery and Vineyards and Winery and why it started and how it started and how long you've been there and the whole thing.
Well, the winery's been around since 2003, and it started off as a, for my mom anyway, Sheila, who's the owner of the winery. She started making wine as a hobby, and then back in 2002, she decided that she wanted to be a small commercial winery, and she actually started the actual facility in about 500 square feet of space. And now we're about 2,500 square feet of production. And about a year ago, we expanded by about 2,500 square feet.
Wow.
And have a tasting room, and we opened to the public, which we hadn't done previously in all those years. We thought we were going to just basically manufacture. And, you know, pretty much tourism is really, really where it's at when you're a small winery. Because, you know, people, if they don't know you exist, they can't come to see you, and they can't try your product. So that's, you know, that's pretty much how it's kind of evolved a little bit. Make a lot of different wines. We make everything from the standard, the reds and whites and dry, semi-sweet, sweet, We do some ice wines. We do some natural fruit-infused wines as well. And we just look at it as being fun. I mean, when I bring people on a tour here, I'm not out to sell anybody anything other than a fun time. And that's pretty much the name of the game here at Sheila Lara.
It sounds great. Okay, we know how the Sheila name got into it. The Lara is...
It's basically a play on names. It was when she when my mom first started, she had a female friend, and they used to make wine together. And when my mom decided to go commercial, you know, she kind of liked the name Sheila, and you know, she kind of put together this name of Sheila Lara, which I have to say, I have to admit, in the early days, people thought it was maybe Celtic or European. People couldn't pronounce it, so we worked pretty diligently on to basically try to make the pronunciation a little easier for people, and we've done some label redesigns and things like that. But in the short period of time, Ron, that we've been open to the public, you know, the vast majority of the people have a nice time because it's become more of a destination. Day trip type of event, but people can, you know, people come here and they can, we give them a tour, nothing, you know, very in-depth, but we give them a tour, we fire up the bottling line, kind of give it that Willy Wonka effect, and then we have some tables with the tablecloths, and we put a little music on, and people get to try a multitude of different ones, and different groups that show up separately and are seated at a table, and then by the end of the session, they've already exchanged numbers. They're all ready to get together and go to dinner. A lot of times, Ron, I thought maybe these people all showed up together and they knew each other, and so people make a lot of friends here. And you know, we do these tours and tastings on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, and it's just kind of a way to. You know, after the entire winemaking week, the hectic week, it's a nice way to kind of wind down a little bit and receive guests here and let them be the judge of the different types of wines that we create over here.
That sounds fascinating. That's a way to have a winery, to have the people make friends and enjoy the wine. You mentioned wine three or four times there. Tell me about all of your different wines. I'm looking at your website here. You have quite a variety of different wines that you sell. Let's talk about those.
Well, we've got we have a California line of wines. We have 10 acres of vineyard here in Coventry that we grow certain varietals of grapes. And then we also have some other vineyards in California. We also are in co-ops with other vineyards that grow different types of grapes, but we work pretty closely with the growers so that we're able to basically make 25 different wines with or types of wines with about 20 or 21 different varietals, depending upon you know, the time of year and the harvest and the cycles. So then we have some ice wines that we make as well. We work with some vineyards that that harvest during the frost, and so we're able to really be choosy and work with the certain growers that we have longstanding relationships with. We also have we have a limited edition type of wine. It's basically a small a smaller batch run, if you will. We'll be working with vineyards in Australia, Southeast Australia, and in Italy. And wow. You know, we've been working, and basically, when we work with the growers there, and we're bringing fruit in, we might be bringing in only a ton, or a couple of ton at a time. And those tend to be a little more complex wines, a little higher alcohol. They take a little longer to make. I mean, all of our wines range between 9% to 15.5% alcohol, depending upon what we're doing. And of course, they range between, you know, roughly between a year to 3 years. But somewhere in the ballpark of 18 to 24 months in the process. I usually tell our people walking on through that you can pretty much turn anything into alcohol. It's got enough sugar inside
That's
of
right.
about 2 weeks, but it wouldn't be very drinkable.
That's true.
It wouldn't be very tasty. And that's a part of these, that's a part of the actual winemaking process where one winery may produce something. Everyone makes a Chardonnay, or many wineries make a Chardonnay, but there's a different stylistic approach from one winemaker to another winemaker. And so it's as much an art as it is scientific when you're testing the wine, and everyone has their own process. And so that really impacts the final product as well. And so I mentioned that, you know, pretty much the aging of what takes that long period of time would be things like the clarification, the cellaring process, and making those wines, you know, look aesthetically appealing and smell nice and basically taste a certain way. Under this a certain type of profile. The Pinot Grigios usually have a certain type of general profile and things like that. And that's usually what takes a long period of time to do. And then, of course, we also work with fruit infusions, where we do extractions from essences, where we extract them from fruit. And we do basically a back blend sweetening process with a real base wine. I mean, we have Red Zinfandels and Chardonnays and things like that. And then we add natural essences of peach and strawberry, different types of recipes that we get kind of creative with here.
So for California wines, you get the juice in and you do the fermentation and everything there.
We do, when we work with growers and the and we come around to harvest and the grapes are picked, we're bringing in fresh fruit.
Okay.
And we make all the wines here, right here in Coventry, which to a lot, for many people here in Rhode Island that are still discovering us, including people literally that live not too far away here in Coventry. We hear it all the time that, you know, they've lived in Coventry for 42 years and they never knew there was a winery in Coventry, never mind a vineyard. Because, you know, the thing is, there are some very old wineries here. I know you spoke to, I believe it was Nancy Parker Wilson a couple weeks ago on your show,
right.
And they're part of the Coastal Wine Trail. A lot of those wineries have been around for, you know, a long time. I mean, they've been around, I want to say they've probably been around for over 30 years, which here in Rhode Island is a good period of time. And then we have some wineries that are a little bit older, but it's a small state. So, once you get out to the western area of the state, there were no wineries. There's actually now a winery that opened up last year that we've been working with. We started Wine Trail, actually, in the process of, it's kind of semi-launched, but we have Leighton Farm. And winery about 5.5 miles down the road in West Greenwich, Rhode Island. And 20 minutes up the road from us is Nickel Creek on 10 acres in Foster. And then my grower of the 10 acres here in Coventry, he has 42 acres in Chepachet, about 10 minutes north of Nickel Creek. And he'll be opening up this fall, hopefully. And so we've kind of there's been a little bit of a renaissance period of wineries open, small wineries here popping up, and people that have basically done the unofficial trail now, they'll leave here and they'll go to Nickel Creek or they'll go down to Leighton. People can relax and sit outside on a 100-acre farm with a lake, and there's a lot of scenery out there, and every winery that I know of here in the state or any other state that I've spoken with and observed, even though everyone maybe or a lot of the wineries make a standard red or white like the cabs and things like that, I've noticed, Ron, and I'm sure you do yourself at your own winery, offer something different that someone else doesn't do. And so I always look at of all the wineries that are around here in the country, I look at the More Than Ever because it's more of a choice for the consumer. It's a fun little excursion for our visitors. And, you know, everyone makes something different. Everyone has a different style. I see wine trails and things like that as being more along the lines of camaraderie rather than competition. I really don't think in the whole industry, in the wine world, that there's really very much competition unless you're a huge national brand. That might be a little bit of a different thing. But we have a lot of fun out here. Things have really been developing. Got another gentleman in Johnston, Rhode Island, I understand, who just opened. So a small winery. I've yet to meet him. But you know, this is, you know, we have events, charitable events, and things that. So here in this state, that's a big thing. So that news is big news because. We're the tiniest state in the entire country.
You know, it's amazing that you're saying. I only knew that there were six there. You just mentioned three or four more that there was no idea that they were in opening up in Rhode Island. There, that's great. It's exploding. It seems there.
It's you know the coastal wine trail, like when you were speaking with Nancy a couple of weeks ago, of which Joe Sherry from last week's show at Langworthy, who's part of the coastal. That coastal wine trail starts at Langworthy and Westerly, and then winds all the way up to the Cape, the Truro, and so there are about nine of them on that trail. Some of them are in southeastern, as they call it, Massachusetts, and then of course over here on the western end we have Leyden Farm and Winery, Sheila Lara, Nickel Creek, soon to be Mulberry Vineyards in Chepachet. Hopefully in the next couple of months. And, of course, there's Diamond Hill in Cumberland, which has been around as a winery for a long, long time. They are, from what I understand, one of the country's oldest wineries. They've been around a long time. But
what was the name of that?
That's Diamond Hill. Which
Diamond Hill?
Huh. Diamond Hill in Cumberland, Rhode Island.
Diamond Hills is one of them that's listed on the list of wineries in Rhode Island. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So I think little by little, these wineries here in the state that have not really been known or just starting to open, we'll eventually get them on list and, hopefully work with the folks at Coastal Wine Trail on the coastal side of the state. And hopefully the Connecticut Wine Trail, and maybe we'll have a link up. Because we've noticed a lot this summer where people have traveled to come over the border from Connecticut. They come into Rhode Island. That's why one of the things that I think is super about wineries and the whole wine trail in any given state is that you have folks that come in from out of state, or they come in on a bus trip where they drive in or they're on vacation. They want to do a day trip or a day type of activity. And they inject capital into the economy in that given state. And they all gas up their cars and they get lunch or dinner at hopefully a local restaurant. And I'm sure you might find that in Florida too, that you must have a certain number of out-of-state visitors.
A lot.
Right? Florida is a very big destination point here in the United States. And the nice thing is when people come in and they come to visit you and they enjoy some wine, they buy a bottle or two and they buy some souvenirs and things like that, but they go to lunch or dinner. And, the hospitality wins. The hospitality industry wins because of hotels and things like that. So, I think one of the major components to the whole winery industry, especially the small ones, and I mean smaller than a national brand.
Most wineries in this country are small wineries anyway. I mean, really.
True. They are.
They are. They are. You know.
You mentioned
the industry is not.
I'm just saying, you mentioned your vineyard. Let's go back to that for a second here. How many, you said you got 10 acres. What do you have planted out there?
We're growing some Catawba. We're growing some Cabernet Franc there. We grow some Sauvignon Blanc. And we have a couple of acres there in addition that are under cultivation. So, you know, we've been getting some fairly good fruit from those vines. That's been around for about 8-9 years, roughly. And it really took about 5 or 6 years before these vines really started to bear anything that was really worth mentioning or using.
That long?
Well, in this case up here, it did. I've got another husband and wife team down, believe it or not, and if you're looking at your map, in North Kingstown, Rhode Island. And they have some acreage down there, and he works with French hybrids, and he's looking at maybe in about a year or so opening up a winery and offering some of his French hybrids. And the very interesting thing about French hybrids, which I wasn't really aware of until maybe about 8-9 months ago, was that based on where we are located here in Rhode Island, on this particular latitude, it kind of lines up with certain, from what I understand, I didn't look at the map myself, but it's in line with a certain region or regions of France where there are some where they're very successful with French hybrids. So, and the soil conditions here in Rhode Island have been quite good to basically bear a really nice, produce a really nice fruit along the French hybrid line that some of these, for instance, this gentleman and his wife grow in North Kingstown. So I guess I would have to say that I was shocked and did not know that. Just as there are people here in Coventry and the surrounding towns here in Rhode Island that have never known that we existed. So it takes time. It just takes time with people to visit and try your product and your different varietals and things of that nature before they really can. It's really called, I guess, building a brand. I once had a large distributor who told me, you know, it's a difficult industry, and he was absolutely right, because the part of the entire process is educating the public as to what you produce. And then you try to attempt to build a brand so that you have fans that really enjoy your product and will go to a liquor store or their favorite restaurant and request a glass to drink with their meal. So anytime you're in a particular state or you're maybe regionally, it's really kind of a different ball game than being, you know, a national or an international brand, as I'm sure you can appreciate yourself on that end.
Right. The fruit infused wines. Those were interesting. Can you tell me a little bit more about those?
Well, what I do is, for instance, as an example, I have a a Riesling. I have various wines that I make. And what I do is I do an extraction from fruit. So I get the sucrose and the essence that has been extracted. I basically use I have a process where I'm extracting, instead of it being, let's say, a syrup, because we don't use the artificial colors in corn syrups and things like that. I do an extraction from fruit. And then I do a deck blend to a base wine, and then we end up with, as an example, like a strawberry Riesling, which I explain to people. It's strawberry wine. Well, it's Riesling with strawberry, the strawberry essence, which is clear from the extraction, versus wines made from strawberries, which would be drier with maybe a hint of strawberry, or
a blueberry wine made from blueberries that would taste probably more like a Merlot, a drier red wine, but you would have that hint of blueberry. We're doing we complement a base wine with a natural fruit extraction, which I create a lot of my my essences in my laboratory. I have a lab with a fluorescence microscope and all the titrators and all the standard equipment that would go along in the winemaking process and then some. And then, I kind of get creative after hours and create different flavors and that, like that. And so we try to make things that are fun. That's kind of a line that we have, Ron, that has been described as just being a fun, easily drinkable wine. And, you know, the alcohol range is roughly around 9%. By the time we add some essence to a base wine, it probably ranges between 10 to 13%. The essence kind of cuts the alcohol down a little bit. We have a fairly consistent, recipe. So that's what we do with those. They've been very popular because they appeal to people that normally are not wine drinkers, that don't really care for, let's say, something that's overly sweet, but they don't care for something that would be very dry either. So anytime you look at something as being new and novel or something a little bit different, it appeals even to the wine, to the beer drinkers, that, you know, people are just, you know, you have standard drinkers that do beer and or mixed drinks, cocktails and things like that. And this is kind of a little niche product that we've had a certain amount of success with that that has been described as being just very fun. So that's our fruit infused. We currently have 9 different flavors of our fruit infused.
Very
interesting.
Are you the are you your mom the one that puts those together? Who is the one that?
My mom Sheila owns the winery, and my brother Jason, he's the he handles the sales, promotion, and administration, so that I can really concentrate on running the actual facility, and I'm the chief winemaker here at Sheila Lara, so I'm the guy really who makes all the wines. And I have some assistant winemakers that take directions, so, you know, transfer this to that, size that tank up, do this, do that. We have a certain regimen here. And one of the other major parts of the equation in the entire winemaking process, which I'm sure you can appreciate, is, you know, cleanliness is job one. So I mean, you have to be very, you have to, I mean, I tell people when I bring them on the tour that during a 10-hour block of operation here, that, you know, you're probably looking at a good 7 to 8 hours of preparation, sanitation, things like that, getting the equipment, getting the, you know, anything that the fruit, the crush, the wine could possibly touch or come in contact with, it has to be sanitary. And, you know, if not, there's where you have problems down the way. So, you know, I'm a very retentive person when it comes to cleanliness. And so we go through this, we have this whole food-grade sanitation process here, instituted here at Sheila Lara. And then, of course, I have a certain way that I like to, I have a certain style, a certain way that I like to make my wines. And, you know, we're small. We're small. The largest batches that we're producing right now is about 1,000 gallons. I mean, we have multiple batches, but we were anything from 53 gallons to something very small, a very niche type of market wines to 1,000 gallons. And, you know, we're going through some expansion here, which has really all been made possible since we actually opened to the public about a year ago. And opened your doors on the weekends and invited people to come on down to experience the entire, the Sheila Lara experience, and come on down and see what we were all about. So,
you know, you mentioned the cleaning. I've always said out of 5 days of making wine, the first 4 days are spent on cleaning, and then the fifth day you make the wine.
Right.
It's,
yeah.
It really emphasized that because it is so critical. You're right.
It's very repetitive. I mean, very repetitive. You could just fall by the numbers, that part anyway. Even before you get to the fun stuff. You know, the fun
right.
stuff is making wine. The required the required processes are the sanitation and the preparation of to be able to accept or to be able to move these wines from, let's say, one fermenter, a holding tank, to another, you know, things of that nature. I remember back in 2003, I want to say back to about, I remember 2006, we actually purchased our bottling line, automatic bottling line, which was a huge, not only was it a huge investment, but it was a very big development for what we were looking to do, because we had always hand-filled the bottles. We had, added a little bit of food-grade nitrogen to displace the air, you know, for the headspace in the bottle. We were
right.
corking. It was really, really labor-intensive. And, of course, once we got this bottling line, which I have become intimately accustomed to, because you have to. These things go down. It's called calling a technician from out of state to travel on in to service. It's very pricey. But the nice thing about a bottling line, do you have one, Bron, by the way?
No, I don't. I'm still doing the labor intensive.
Okay. When you're ready, you let me know, because I have another company called Vine Nut Systems, as I think you and I had a conversation about a week and a half ago. And it's called Vine Nut Systems, and I work with small to medium-sized wineries and breweries with hard equipment. We do some consulting, things consumable like filtration media, housings. We carry Paul filtration. We carry Shelco. We carry the entire line of Sienna instruments. And what happened was I got involved in this because about the time you make the turn from a hobby level to commercial, you really have to be either buying in quantity, or you have to have a better price as a commercial manufacturer than
right.
working with, on the hobby scale. And one of the things that has developed here since we've had tourists walk on in is that I meet so many home winemakers and brewers. I mean, I've got home winemakers that are, they're older. I mean, younger ones too, but we have men and women who are in their 70s and 80s. They look great. Apparently the secret is a glass or two of wine a day, and they look fantastic. And they'll tell me the stories about when they were 4 years old and could stand on an orange crate, and they were making wine with their dad and their grandfather, both, obviously Portuguese and Italian backgrounds. Those just two of the cultures that have made wine
forever.
you hear about forever. And we have people that walk on through and they'll mention, I make wine. And so one of the things that I'm able to do now is I'm able to also cater to the home winemaker or the wine club, where there are 4 or 5 or 10 members in a club and they kind of pool all their assets. We actually work with fresh grapes, so I can bring them in a ton of fresh grapes if they want something in particular and they put an order in. So we try to work, on a personal level, because it's always nice to work with a home winemaker, because everyone was a home winemaker before they became, well, for the most part, I would think, commercial. I mean,
yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to, to work with those folks. I mean, so many of the people that have walked in here, even the newer wineries that are kind of popping up across the country, here in Rhode Island especially, that, because everything here is close here in Rhode Island, they all started making wine as a hobby. That's how my mom started. That's how Sheila Lahr started. It started as my father passed away a little over 16 years ago, and my mom kind of needed, what is she going to do? She needed a hobby. She, you know, was she going to golf? Was she going to paint? She decided she was going to learn to, she was going to get into winemaking. And that's what she did. And then little by little, I mean, it's just, you know, it was an idea. It was a notion in the early days. And, now things are starting to catch on a little bit. I'm sure you probably realized maybe something similar. And when you first started, and maybe a lot of folks weren't aware of, you know, Ron and his winery. And little by little, as people come and visit, they're introduced to your line of wines, and they enjoy something, and they say, oh, I know that guy. I've been there. I've been to that winery. And that's kind of, I think, how it all kind of starts. And I There's think mushrooms. That's how it. Yeah. I think that they go hand in hand. I mean, people who like good food, good wine, good conversation, good company. I really kind of, you think about it. I mean, you have a glass of wine, you have some nice conversation. This is what we see even when we go to certain restaurants. And now there's been a little resurgence of from some of the locals and the local liquor stores where people now come in and they ask for it. Where, you know, before it was Sheila who. So we always tried to do here is we tried to do things that are a little bit, we do standard things, you know, standard varietals, but we also try to kind of break the mold a little bit and do things that are a little bit different. And so, you know, one of the things that I do is I like to encourage people that walk through these doors, hey, you want to learn how to make wine, I'll love to work with you. Call me. Here's my card. You know, I'm accessible. Here's my email. Here's my phone number. You can call me. I return all my calls. Sometimes I pick up the phone if I'm available. And for those that have been making wine for a period of time, if they need equipment or they need supplies, things like that, I like to assist. I think it's nice to, you know, who knows? That today's home winemaker could be tomorrow's Gallo.
Could be, you
don't know. I mean, you really don't know. And so I kind of take that approach.
Is your bottling line? What are you using now?
I'm using a Guy bottling line, GAI. It's an Italian fully automatic bottling line. It's a
monoblock?
Monoblock, yeah. It's a monoblock machine. It does approximately 1,500 bottles an hour, which translates to about 25 bottles a minute. It's got a nitrogen sparge option, vacuum packing. You pack at about negative 28 pounds per square inch. So when you pull a cork out of our bottles, you hear a pop. It's because there's no atmosphere in there. And I also like to use I like to use Italian corks. There's been a lot of the synthetics and things. I've heard people ask me all the time. I don't have anything really bad to say about other closures, but I prefer cork. I like cork. I like the elastic. I like the properties of cork. I'm very fortunate. I work with a lot of different companies. I actually work with a company which is an Italian company that has a headquarters here in the United States. It's called Danau.
Familiar with them.
Cork manufacturer. Yeah. You've probably heard of them. And which is the nice thing is I actually have a representative who about every quarter travels to pretty much every one of his accounts east of the Mississippi. And then he makes his entire way all the way down around to Bayou, down in Florida, and then drives all the way up the East Coast and stops off to see me, and he's accessible. So if I have a question, which is really nice, and that's become kind of a feature that I let folks know about on the tour, that, you know, I like to work directly with these manufacturers, even the glass blowers. There's not a lot of glass. A lot of folks don't seem to realize, you know, EPA killed a lot of glass blowing plants here in the United States. It's become a very glass blowing is a very dirty business. It uses a lot of energy. It puts off an awful lot of pollutants. And it's just a very hostile industry here in the United States anyway, where we have very high standards of protecting the environment. So that kind of forces you and I and other wineries or manufacturers to go elsewhere for their bottles. And I use Italian and French, two of the world's largest manufacturers. One is actually Saint-Gobain, which is a worldwide company. They're huge. But the nice thing is, and one of the reasons why you have to be able to purchase the best possible components is because you want your bottles to be as round as possible. There's a, you know, everybody's got the molds. I mean, the molds are usually Italian and Spanish molds. They purchase the molds and everybody's getting into it. You really want your product to really shine in its package. And it's very important. When we purchase bottles, how do you purchase your bottles? Are you purchasing cased or already, or are you buying them bulk in a sanitary blister pack? I'm
buying them out of actually Canada.
Okay. And they're already cased? They're already cases before when you get them?
Yes.
Okay, which means you have to sulfite all these bottles. You've got to put them through a sulfiting process, which is very labor-intensive. And we do, because we have the bottling, because we have this bottling line, is what we've done is, I'll bet a lot of people don't know this, that when you purchase your glass in cases, and most of these large warehouses or importers that one would work with, they literally have a crew that will all this glass comes in a big blister pack, basically. It comes on a pallet in a very enveloped in a very heavy gauge plastic sheet, if you will, and with a certificate of it being sanitary. And there's usually somewhere between 1,300 to 1,700 pieces of glass per pallet. And when you crack the seal, that's when it, you know, that's when it gets, it comes
unsanitary
into contact with the air here in the U.S. That's when it, right, exactly. And then, of course, what we do is we purchase our glass from these large blowers, and we have them brought in through these importers, and they're basically bulk packed. So they're sealed right from the factory, because a bottle is blown at about 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And then, of course, as they cool down to room temperature, they have robotic systems that assemble, is what they do. When we run things through our bottles, through our bottling line, we crack the seal and we take them down level by level and we run them down a conveyor belt. So they're clean. They're sanitary when we get them. And then they go through the nitrogen sparge to displace the air in the bottle. And we have our rotary piston filling system and things, all the different components that will make every bottle uniform, along with a vacuum pack and an insertion of a Italian corker, and it follows on down the line, and it gets a shrink wrap capsule, hits the oven, front and back, a label application, and then we have quality control checks, down the line to make sure there hasn't been a label misfeed, things like that. But those are one of the ways that you can be a little more, a winery can become more competitive in the marketplace and offer, you know, wines at a certain price point where when things are very, and we have a certain amount of labor too. I mean, we have people that work here. But we've tried to automate where we thought it would be really necessary to automate. But that didn't come the first day. That's little by little. We keep in mind, Ron, we started with three 150-gallon custom-rolled fermentation tanks. and in 500 square feet of space in a converted mill in downtown Providence back in 2003, you're hand-filling everything, hand-corking all the bottles. And, you know, these little by little, when we relocated here to Coventry, of course, there was nothing here. So everything, when people walk in and they
I see the wows. You know, you can read the say, you know, people don't even, they say, oh wow, this is very deceiving. You walk in, it's very bright, very cheery, and they don't expect to have this whole tour, and they don't expect to be able to speak with a winemaker. I'm sure you probably noticed when probably visitors walk into your winery and you're accessible, and they can meet Ron, they can talk to you.
Right.
That's a big thing, because you're the guy creating this stuff. And to someone who's a wine drinker, or they're going to come to your facility for an event, that's a big thing. So it's been an evolution. It's been a whole, and that's one of the reasons why I started Vinut Systems back in 2003, was because, you know, you basically want to work as directly, since we have a family winery, everything that I sell, we use. And in a lot of the circumstances, I actually showcase equipment that my company carries. I mean, not everything, but, you know, we can demonstrate, you know, as an example. I'm sure you use, I'm guessing you use plate and frame technology for
yes.
filtration when you filter.
Yes.
And we used to use the same thing, but it's very messy. I think you might agree with that.
Yes.
With the drip plate and all, I mean, it's a real, you really need to know how to load these things and prepare them and ratchet it down. And so what happened was, a few years ago, we got rid of our plate and frame. We went to lenticular filtration, which is the same filtration media, except it looks like a inline cartridge housing, except it's much wider, and it's modular, and it's a closed system. So you can actually sanitize these modules, and you can flush them, and you can regenerate them to a certain degree. And then, of course, when they're spent, they've reached their useful life, they can be tossed, and they're also biodegradable. They're not dangerous for the environment. So this is, and so that every drop, literally, runs from the holding tank to through this lenticular system to the transfer tank, which has been very easy. It's kind of analogous to, you know, if you've seen the whole Ron Popeil Showtime rotisserie, you know, you set
right.
it, forget it.
Right.
It's really an awful lot like that. I mean, you really can just, it's amazing what you can do other things. I mean, to do 1,000 gallons of wine takes a long time. If you don't have enough plates, or you don't have, you kind of underestimated how many plates or how many filtration media pads you want to use on a plate and frame, you may have to change it out.
Yes.
This way, literally, Ron, I can do 1,000 gallons in about 2 hours.
Wow.
It's that fast. And it's really, and it's clean. And it's amazing what you can do. Because there's a lot of technology, I think you would agree, that is involved in winemaking today. It's not, you know, it's not your grandfather's winemaking really anymore. It's
no.
a whole different, there's a lot of technology that goes into all these different components and all these different processes to really create a superior product. And my goal as a winemaker, I'm sure probably a lot of winemakers probably are on the same level, is that you really want to have a final product, a final wine bottled properly, so that it will be shelf stable for a good number of years, and people can take them home. And if they have a wine cellar or a wine rack that people like to collect wines from all these different, you know,
oh, yeah.
wineries that they visit, that, you know, that they can take up, that they can feel comfortable that the wines aren't going to go bad in the bottle, which is why we use vacuum pack technology, which is why we use, we do a certain amount of filtration, so that there are no stray yeast cells, in the product, things like that. We don't ever do anything that would strip out the desirable characteristics of the wine. But you want to make sure that, and of course, the other thing too is we also comply with FDA, and we,
right.
we make
yeah.
sure we have full traceability with the issued lot codes. We keep a wine library. We know exactly how every batch leads here. And then, of course, we have to be cognizant that, you know, a lot of people leave a bottle of wine in their trunk because, you know, they forget they do. Things happen. You know, I'm sure you've been through that. So we take more of a, an equal scientific type of approach as well. And we like to have things, we want people to have an enjoyable experience with our wines. And so that was kind of the litany. That is actually the litany of how we got started back in 2003 when my mother decided that, you know, this would be very cool to have a new little local winery here in little old Rhode Island, the smallest state in the entire country. And of course, she's got two boys and me and my brother, and we've been working fairly diligently since then. And one of the major components really has been meet your customers. You know, to be able to interact and meet your customers. And we are always asking people who come and visit, what do you like? Which wines did you really enjoy? What do you think? What would you like to? What do you normally like to drink? You know, what kind of an experience do you like to have with certain types of varietals or vinifera? Because I mentioned to people that we make wines currently that are grape wines. They make wines made from grape, where you can make wine from literally anything,
anything.
That has enough sugar.
Yes.
Sure. I mean, the term...
Anything.
Anything. I mean, the percent sugar is... The other term is BRIX, B-R-I-X. People have no idea what I'm talking about when I mention this to them. I tell them it's just a term. This is what it means. Nothing... You know, nothing major, just this is what it means. It's called BRIX. And
I tell people, we're wine people. We're cool, so we say things like BRIX instead of sugar. That's
right,
the difference.
Right, yeah, exactly. I talk to Steve O'Connor of Nickel Creek and other winemakers here all the time, and this is how we communicate in wine talk. This is Blog Talk Radio, all about wine. So when winemakers talk amongst themselves about winemaking and things like that, there's that lingo of wine talk, I call it, not coffee
That's
talk,
right.
wine talk. And so I try to educate people a little bit I don't like to lose anybody. I just kind of keep it as brief as I can. And I give them the overview and my exact words go something like this. You pretty much can make you can pretty much turn anything into alcohol if it has enough sugar, and you can do it in about 2 weeks.
That's
it
right.
wouldn't be very tasty, so you kind of, that's where the artistic or stylistic procedures kind of come in. But I have fun. I have fun doing this, Ron. Sometimes it gets monotonous, but I have to tell you, it's very gratifying.
It's always exciting. A couple of quick questions here, Andrew.
Sure.
Stainless steel or oak or a combination of both? What do you use?
Well, you know, I'll tell you. I like to use, our standard here, is, which is pretty much most in the industry now, is stainless steel because it's very sanitary. You can clean it. You can sanitize these things. When I do use oak, I do mention to my, visitors that on some of our wines we use oak. Not all of them, but when we do use oak, I use oak staves. I explain to them what a stave is, which is everybody's heard of a barrel. Everybody say, "Oh, sure, a barrel," which will only hold about 60 gallons, roughly, at a time, you know, for each barrel. And of course, if you're working on 1,000 gallons, it becomes very difficult, and it becomes that's a whole different process in terms of sanitizing, cleaning barrels, maintaining. Barrels that have a certain lifespan because after about a year,
not to mention the cost.
They're expensive. Yeah, I deal in barrels too, directly from the cooperage houses in Hungary and in France, and anything from American to Hungarian or French oak, and I will tell you that the barrels are between $600 to $1,000. The amazing thing is they operate in, it's almost like translation of currency, where everything in Europe is the euro, and everything is so volatile it changes, and they convert currency. And so today you purchase a barrel for X, and tomorrow, you know, it's on the spot. It's how much is the currency to the dollar? It's, you know, versus the euro. So when I use oak, the short answer to the question is, your question is, when I use oak on some of our wines, I use the staves, and our staves are usually range about 5 feet long, about almost 6 inches in width. And we drop them through the centers of the tanks, and it's the same selection. We have the same choices of a barrel, but instead of them being the strips of wood being bent into a barrel form, they're straight. And you can have American and Hungarian or French oak. You can have light, medium, heavy toast. I think barrels are good when one wants to do, let's say, malolactic fermentation, the secondary fermentation, which is a very different process than the initial fermentation and the cellaring and things like that. Because I mentioned to people that what a malolactic fermentation is bringing your natural sulfate levels way down and then introducing a laboratory strain of bacteria, which causes a secondary fermentation, which is not advantageous to many wine varietals or many grape varietals. The end result might not really be what you're looking for. But I think overall the whole wine experience to a lot of people is the romance of barrels. But there's new technology today with other types of materials that will allow it oxygen. The purpose of barrels are not only to impart some oak, but the exchange of oxygen to the wine through the barrel. The only problem, one of the other problems with barrels I found is unless you keep the barrel full all the time, and the wood is the oak is swollen, mm-hmm. they leak, and so that's a problem, you know. And sanitizing a barrel, realizing that it's a natural material, they can harbor. You have to really, really be diligent with your sanitation procedures. Because I'm sure if you use oak barrels, that takes a lot of time to do, and you really need to know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Those are, you know, those are just my observations. I've been doing this actually for a little better than 15 years. I'm not as experienced as, let's say, some of these old timers that have been doing it for 30 or 40 years. I work with a lot. I've been very fortunate to work with some really fine winemakers and chemical engineers that have been doing this for decades, and they mentor. I have been mentored by them. And then, of course, what I like to do is anytime I speak with a new winemaker or someone who's a new winery and they need assistance, I like to help them because I was there 15 years ago. So I think, you know, it's just something I feel comfortable doing. I like to talk wine. I like to help my fellow winemakers. I like to speak with my my fans, you know, my customers, my tourists, my visitors that really like something. And I like to know, you know, that you want to tell me all about it, and I love to hear it. I mean, that's what makes my days, Ron, are probably, I would have to say, 12 to 18-hour days. They're probably closer to 16 to 18 than they are 12. And I work 7 days a week, and it's a very demanding industry, as I'm sure you would agree with. And so on a weekend, when I am able to chat with someone who really likes my wine, it's so gratifying that they enjoyed it and they just think it's just wonderful. And I think it's wonderful.
That is always a plus. It's just, you're right.
It gives validation to all that hard work. So,
right.
Yeah, and I mean, not to get, I don't want to really get too technical to all your listeners out there, but yeah, I mean, there's an awful lot of science today in this industry that goes into making wine. It's not just, you know, not just crush up the grapes and, you know, the wild yeast. We use all laboratory strains of yeast, as I'm sure you do. So, you know, every time you're pretty much going to come out with, it's not, it's never Russian roulette. It's never, oh, I got this wild yeast this year, you know. Last year was terrible. What happened? And so we really try to keep it, all these conditions controlled. But I really think the wine industry as a whole here in this country has really, really been developing. I mean, you know, there have been all kinds of issues and things about, you know, interstate shipping and all these other different types of things that arise about the entire industry. But I think as a whole, I think the more consumers out there that can have access to all these different states and all these different wines and all these different states, the winners are the consumer. That's my belief, because this is what makes the United States an industry leader in what it has available to a consumer. If it were more controlled, I think there would be a lot less wineries around than there are today, because you really need people to, consumers to see you, to try your brand. And it's very difficult. I remember Nancy, you know, she's been doing this for a long time, and her family had a farm that actually they started growing grapes, and that's how they got into that winery.
She explained that for years they've been there.
A long time. And it's very difficult. And even logistically, never mind monetarily, every state, which I'm guessing maybe many of the consumers are not aware, that although a winery possesses a federal license from ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, or now they call themselves TTB, every state regulates alcohol within the borders of its state. So certain states will allow shipment out or shipment in or none at all. And so if we're in Rhode Island, and as an example, you're in Florida. So if you want to go do business, have your wine in, let's say, the next state over across the border, you have to deal with state liquor control for that next door state, let's say, like Georgia. You can't just walk on in and still let me peddle my wine, but you can do a little restroom. You can't do that. So, you know, these are... So there are a lot of developments that I think that have been working their way through. I don't think we're anywhere near where I think it is a total triumph for the average wine drinker or the consumer. But I think it's getting there. I think so too.
Yeah.
I think it's
improving all the time. It's still a long ways to go, but it's improving.
So that's pretty much my experience here in Rhode Island. How are you doing down in Florida?
We're doing well.
Tell me about your experiences. What do you do?
I make wine the slow, tedious, long, hard way.
Yeah.
And bottle the slow, tedious, long, hard way.
Yeah.
An uphill battle all the time, but it is most wineries.
Yeah.
Now you're always sitting there trying to do better,
right?
And so, yeah, right. It's what's going on. Mike, do you have any questions for Andrew here before we run out of time?
No, I think everything is good. Very interesting discussion tonight. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, everything's good.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
I'm impressed with the show. I have to say, Ron, before we sign off, I've been listening now to some of your podcasts or whatever they call them on the Blog Talk Radio. Very interesting. I have to say that you really have the quality of these qualities of a talk show host. In addition, obviously, from what I understand, a very good wine, very
very astute winemaker.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the compliment.
Kudos to you.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Kudos to you.
I appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome. I appreciate the invitation tonight as well.
Well, before you leave, tell us
all
contact information, everything for Sheila Lara Vineyard and Winery, including Facebook and Twitter and websites and phone numbers and addresses and everything in case anyone in that area is listening, they want to go, or if anyone's traveling, they want to get in touch with you or something.
Sure. Well, we can be found on the web at www.SheilaLara.com. It's SheilaLara.com. We do have a Facebook, which we're trying to develop a little bit more, but we have a decent number of followers that enjoy the product. Our main telephone number is 401-623-8606. And
Twitter?
Yes. We do have a Twitter, but I don't. You know, I'm not. Computers scare me. I can make wine, but I really, one little quick thing, Ron, is I can make wine, and apparently I do a pretty good job of that, and I'm fairly mechanically inclined with respect to, you know, servicing the bottling line and equipment and things like that. But as far as computers go, they scare me. It's difficult for me to grasp that concept. of computers. But we do have a Twitter, and you know, folks can just visit our website. We're always bringing it up to date, and you know, adding new information and things like that. Feel free to give us a call if you're local, or you're coming in from out of state, and for a convention or a vacation, and you'd like to visit. We'd love to have you. And for all the home winemakers out there that would like a little more information, or would like to chat about equipment, they can always contact me simply at andrew@SheilaLara.com. andrew@SheilaLara.com is my direct email, and we make ourselves available to folks.
Fantastic. I'm on your Facebook page now, and I see a new Gatsby Wine Slush, an Icy Cold Delicious and Frozen Strawberry and Watermelon Wine Slush.
Yeah, we do that. You know, Ron, we do so many different things. I have to tell you that I really wish, the shame of it is there's only 24 hours in the day, which translates to 168 hours in the entire week, and by the time you get done with a 12 to 14 hour day on average or so, basically what amounts to really intense, some of it's physical, very physical, it doesn't leave me as much time as I'd like, but we're always doing new things. We're always working on, you know, new things. I have people come up here that mention that they go down to the Carolinas, and they've actually been down to Florida, down by you, and people are in love with the muscadine grape. They just, they love those. I mean, you either love it or you hate it, but most people I speak with, they have nothing, they just rave about it. And
yeah,
so,
I know. It is a love-hate grape, too, I tell you.
Yeah, it is, but it's one of those things where we don't grow them up here. We don't grow them up here. And I have people, the first time someone mentioned this to me, I was like, what? And little by little, I've become educated because in different parts of the country, different types of grapes, different genuses of fruit are grown.
Right.
So, it's been a learning experience for me too, as well as, you know, so many people that walk through our doors and any other winery, throughout the country. But, I would say we're in it for the long haul. You know, we're having a good time and doing what we're doing. And I think as long as I have a good time and I'm having fun, that's really the name of the game, having
that
fun.
That really is. You're absolutely right.
So, yeah. So that's pretty much it in short. I mean, maybe on one of your future shows as you move around the country, if you would like for me to be a guest again, I'd love to chat with you about any other types of grapes or what have you. I find your show fascinating.
I find the entire Blog Talk Radio a fascinating concept. I was not aware of it. And we've been telling all of our visitors about your show as well.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that. And I will make a note here in a future date. I just may give you a call and get you back on the air and see how things are going.
I'll consider it an honor.
Sounds real good. You're only open weekends, right?
Well, right now we do weekends. Right now we're for the public. So the public, we're open on weekends, but we operate during the week, and we're a small winery. So it's kind of different. Right now, it would be difficult to be open, say 5 or 6 or 7 days a week, because how would we be able to produce otherwise? But I think as time goes on, and we expand a little bit, we're looking to be open more than just on the weekends. Are you open 7 days a week?
Yes, we are.
Down there? Okay. All right. Yeah. I know it's a lot of wineries are, you know. It's been recently run that we've actually hired some tasting room staff.
Oh.
And people like that. So once we kind of get our crew together, you know, once we get the staff organized and acclimated and we have our final system, I see it being very feasible to having more days available and more hours available where people could just kind of walk on in. And I think it makes a lot of sense to do that. This has really been very new for us because really literally this time last year, we just opened our doors and hadn't had any experience with the public really, other than, you know, at a liquor store, maybe that carried some of our products for a wine tasting. Or something along those lines. But most of what I see here in this industry is hospitality. You've got to be hospitable to the public. You've got to, there's a reason why there's a reason why the term is hospitality. You've got to be, you've got to have a certain amount of that. You have to be a people person to a degree or you're in the wrong business. So
very true.
We always look forward to, I always look forward to speaking to our customers, our fans, as I mentioned earlier in the show. And I'm going to be following you, Ron, on Blog Talk Radio, all about wine.
Thank you. Appreciate that. One last question before I let you go.
Sure.
Are you a native Rhode Islander?
I am, all my life. I mean, born here, raised here. I have been outside the borders of Rhode Island during my lifetime. I have traveled. I have traveled to, a lot of these relationships that we have with vineyards. One of the ways you create a relationship is you go to visit them, and you get to know the growers and the owners. And same thing, we work with vineyards in Italy, in Southeast Australia, and across the United States. So I mentioned that what I tell people is, we're not bringing in bottled wine. You know, we're working with grapes. We're growing grapes. We're working with vineyards in various parts of the country and or the world where the soil conditions are optimal. The climate is where it needs to be to get a premium fruit that you otherwise could not grow here, let's say, in Rhode Island all the time. We do grow some grapes, but we work with other vineyards in southeastern Massachusetts and across the country. And, of course, you have to create a relationship. We work with vineyards in the Finger Lakes, Upper State New York, where because one of the big things is soil conditions vary so greatly from region to region various parts of the world. And so when you're growing down there in Florida, you're probably, I'm sure, getting a very optimal grape for the genus of fruit of vine that you grow. But it might be difficult to have something else that, maybe let's say Chilean that's grown in Chile or somewhere else in the world, that grape, what you're doing in your vineyards, you have vineyards, I take it, from what I understand,
right?
Correct?
Right.
You're able to produce a fruit that is very suited for probably, I'm guessing, a lot of the styles of wines that you make there. And so that's, if you had the two of the same vine, from the same root graft, root stock, and
you planted one in Florida in your vineyard, and then you planted another one, let's say, in another part of the world, you would end up with two different grapes, two different types of fruit.
Because it gives you a different taste in the final product, without doubt.
That's right. Things would be different. And climate, weather, soil conditions, drainage, they all play a major role. And although I don't normally go out to the vineyards and prune those vines, I walk plenty of them. And I work very, very closely with the growers. I'm more of the winemaker. But I do know what the process and what really needs to go into that it's very labor intensive. I mean, anyone who's when they have a title vineyard master, they are a master of grapevines or growing, and you really need to know what you're doing when you're doing that. It doesn't leave it's so labor intensive. It really doesn't leave an awful lot of time. I admire those people out there that both grow grapes themselves and then they make the wine. They do both, and yeah. I don't know how they sleep. But it's very intensive. It's a very labor intensive process.
There's a lot of around the country that do it.
Sure. Oh, there are a lot of them that do it. So And I'm going to look forward to when the next time I get down to Florida to come and visit you, because I'm pretty impressed with the whole Ron Hunt operation myself from where I sit up here in the Northeast. So
actually, Andrew, you do a great job up there too, and I'm quite impressed with what you had to say today. Very, very interesting information.
Well, I thank you very much. And if you ever get up this way before I get down to see you, you have an open invitation to come and visit Sheila Lara Vineyards and Winery.
I would definitely put that on my list, and I would look forward to it.
Fantastic. All right. Well,
thank you again for everything. Have yourself a wonderful evening, and I will put
you
on the list. We'll be getting in touch with you in the future.
Well, fantastic. And thank you very much. Once again, thank you very much for inviting me to be a guest on your show this evening.
Well, I thank you for taking the time out, and you're quite welcome. We'll look forward to talking to you sometime in the future then, and good luck to you.
Fantastic. You too, Ron. Have a great evening.
You too, now. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Wow, applause and everything from our bus people who are currently dry.
Dry. So. All right. Cool.
Good deal.
Good. Well, I'm glad I gave him a whole evening instead of just giving him a half a show.
Yeah.
Because he had a lot to talk about. That was great. And so, and I don't have to, I said, I was talking to Mike before we got on the air, and I said, you know, if Andrew doesn't talk, then I've got a couple of things here I'll bring up and we can talk about. No worries, nothing to worry about that, because Andrew talked and filled us in, and it was very interesting. I found a lot about Rhode Island and Sheila Lara and winemaking and all sorts of stuff. He's very interesting. So, fantastic. Oh, one thing I did want to bring up, though. I asked him if he was a lifetime Rhode Islander, because I don't know if you noticed or not, but I've always pronounced it Coventry. He pronounced it Caventry.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
He's saying Caventry. And I've always said
Coventry.
Coventry,
yeah.
Coventry.
Well, maybe it could be a... Could be one of the New England type of things, like, you know, parking your car in the garage. Just doesn't happen sometimes.
So that's why I wanted to ask him if he's a new Rhode Island native. We have a festival Saturday, so I'm going to let you talk now and talk about the festival and fill in and all that, because we only have about 5 minutes left.
Okay. Oh, let me run this then, I think. Yep.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. WineFest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at WineFest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at WineFest.
All right. There All you right. go. Fantastic. Saturday is the day, and it's supposed to be pretty dry, I think.
This week is in the afternoons, later afternoons, so hopefully.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. So definitely stop by. It's going to be a great time, as always, at the Florida Estates Winery, and you definitely want to go and have a visit. Did you want to talk about your extra – well, we only have how many minutes?
We only have like 3 minutes, so no.
Yeah,
We'll hit on that. We got some subject. Well, let's give a teaser. Don't they do that on the radio anyway? So we'll give a teaser. I discovered that they're looking at doing a dot wine for the internet. Dot W-I-N-E, dot wine. Or .vin, V-I-N. Mike and I were throwing out all sorts of pros and cons before the program came on. We were going to talk about it. Don't have time tonight, so there's a tease. We will be covering that in the future. If you have any comments or thoughts about it, you can always get a hold of us and leave comments on our sites, and I'll just let Mike tell you all those.
Yes. What?
The website, the Facebook.
Yeah, go to
email.
There's a that's on the ending, isn't it? I believe.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. But you want to visit us? You want to visit us on the? Let's see. You want to go to Facebook and facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. That is the best way to stay in touch with the program, because that's where Ron himself, when he finds out things that.
Post it, let you know.
Post everything up there, and plus you can interact with us, and it's a fantastic way to keep up with the show. Usually I post things during the show itself on Twitter, so if you go to twitter.com/allaboutwineBTR, there's no spaces or dashes or anything, just spell it all out, allaboutwineBTR, all one thing. Every once in a while I do update information on there during the shows, and sometimes before the shows. It just depends. But like I did tonight, I mentioned who we were talking to tonight before the show started, and so those are good ways to do that. You can also email the show if you have comments or questions or anything for a future show. You can if you'd like to be a guest. Introduce yourself and tell us what you do in the wine industry, please, and let us know at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That is a great way to contact us. Ron will get those, and if you don't want to be a guest but you do have a question or feedback or anything, let us know what you like about the show or don't like, or if anything, just let us know regarding the All About Wine show. Send it to that email address as well, allaboutwine101, that's 101, @gmail.com. And, yeah, I think that is in the ending, but okay. Yeah, so next week we may be on. That'll be August 16th, and we'll have a visit in Missouri if possible. But,
if possible,
we'll see.
I'm going to try. Yes. If we don't, then, we won't, but I'm going to try.
Yes.
Oh.
What? Oh, I just said, oh.
We got 90 seconds.
Already? No,
yep.
I've got, I guess so. All right, let me run this real quick. We'll be right back. I offended it. Okay, hold on. See y'all.
Bye.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.